This is Monster X Radio.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Hi. Hi, Clyde. This is Gunner with Monster X.
Hey, Gunner. What's up?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good.
Good. With me is Mr. Shane Corson. We'd like to welcome you to Monster X Radio.
Well, thank you. Good to be on.
One of the exciting things that's coming up here in September is your presentation at the 2017 International Bigfoot Conference. Can you tell us a little bit about what you might be talking about?
Well, I've been just collecting data and stories. I have my own story, of course, to share about Bigfoot, which, of course, I saw up in Southwest Washington. Actually, Southeast Washington, and I just recently was going over the story about the woman in Idaho that said that a Sasquatch was chasing a deer. I mean, there are a lot of good stories to talk about, it, and I may even work in some information that would be very, I think, beneficial to people who most certainly, think of Bigfoot in a sense that it's an animal. Or that it's tangible. I mean, I'm not one to believe that it's, an interdimensional being like some people do. I just think that, from what I saw, it was a very real being, a very real creature.
And I know that Shane and I are on the same page that we tend to, you shouldn't try to solve a mystery with another mystery. And that, if it's a terrestrial animal, it's terrestrial to everybody,
right.
Some people seem to explain it with paranormal aspects and things, I don't see it, why it would be have so much animal behavior that's consistently reported, from yelling in the woods and hitting on trees and carrying away game, do you think if it could just teleport, that it would just teleport to a stool in a, Denny's at the bar and order up a hamburger or something?
Well,
if that was...
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that's the thing, is that most of the time when, and it's difficult, that when you investigate something, let's try to be as practical and logical as we can. I mean, if you close your eyes and you hear horses galloping by, you're not going to call them zebras because you just don't know. And that's the thing.
Right.
I think we're identifying something as a zebra when in reality it's something a lot more simple. And that's the problem I see, is that, Bigfoot gets reduced to tabloid stories because people, I think, are responsible for generating those tabloid stories. And I'm not just saying the media is being extra cruel. I'm just saying that, when you go from a skunk ape or a Sasquatch or a Yeti, and you go from there to some, intergalactic Chewbacca character, I think that immediately those in the media say, well, somebody's been hitting the bottle a little too much, or, these theories are all well and good, and they sell a lot of books, but they really have no basis in fact. And so hypotheticals and speculation tend to sensationalize, and people draw themselves to these awkward and bizarre explanations. And I shake my head and say, look, either we're going to go about this in a way that is scientific and logical, or we're going to continue to play in Ghostville or Alienville, because it's the only way we can, satisfy our interests. I mean, having something as simple as a monkey or a ape or even a missing link roaming around in the forests of the Northwest or roaming around the swamps of the South. I mean, that alone, I think, is out of the ordinary and bizarre. But, you know, just making it out to be more than that, to me, is doing a disservice to those who are, you know, seriously trying to find the truth about this animal or this creature.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Clay, you got this story out of Idaho of this woman who hit a deer, and she blamed hitting this deer on seeing a Sasquatch, you know, and she tried to look at her rearview mirror and end up in the deer. I mean, that's one of those stories where, you know, there may be some truth to it. You know, she may have, in fact, had seen a Sasquatch. But how do we go from you know, most of the media is going to look at that and, like you were just talking about, it's going to make fun of a story like that. But how do we make this a little bit more scientific? How do we get science involved and take the, you know, maybe take another look at this and feel a little more serious?
Well, what we do is, as people who are, you know, really trying to find the truth, we expose those that wish to sensationalize it and say, no, you know, we're not going to play there. And, you know, and who cares if they say, well, you must not be open-minded. No, I'm not. I mean, when it comes to Bigfoot, maybe we need to say, no, I'm really not open-minded, not to that degree. I mean, it's like my mind isn't just a parachute you can fill with nonsense. I pack my chute very well, thank you very much, and I'd rather talk with people who are serious rather than people that are, you know, trying to make this out to be something greater than it is. And I think it's up to us. I mean, all of this happens because there are many times we give, I guess, airtime or paper time or even, you know, stanza time to anybody who makes up some story about Bigfoot. And, you know, it's time to start policing the situation and come up with evidence or at least get serious about it. I mean, one of the things that my buddy and I, Roger, you know, when we're watching these TV shows, so we get all angry when we see those monster hunters, you know, roaming around and everything and acting as though that everything that moves that's brown in the woods is a Sasquatch. I mean, that's embarrassing. And, you know, I personally have been very vocal about that kind of sensationalism. And they think it's harmless, that, you know, the producers think it's harmless, and people just love to, you know, watch this, you know, watch the hillbillies chase after some kind of monkey suit. I personally think that if you're voting with your viewing and you're voting with your dollar, that's why we have problems in Bigfoot investigations, because people, you know, they want to, you know, they think, oh, this is just harmless, but it's not harmless. It's really putting a dent in any of the serious investigations, and it really shows, you know, people who are interested, it makes them feel a little bit, you know, ashamed and maybe a little guilty about what they're doing, because they, you know, I don't want to be a part of that crowd. I don't want to be,
right,
you know, painted with that crowd. And I think a lot of people tend to shy away when they see this type of activity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Well said. You know, there are a few, speaking of you know, TV shows and whatnot, there are a few shows out there that, and I think, do the subject a little bit of justice. I mean, do you think TV as a whole, when it comes to the subject, is just a bunch of garbage? Or are there a few TV shows, documentary companies out there you think that are helping the subject in a positive manner?
Well, yeah, there are a couple, but they're few and far between. And I remember back when I was a kid, the $6 Million Man, Bigfoot was featured on there. Bigfoot turned out to be this huge robot. And it's like, okay, you know, this is where it begins. Bigfoot's now a robot. He's an interdimensional creature. He's this, he's this, he's this. You know, yeah, he's a crypto critter only from the, you know, from the observations of the fact that he's elusive. But, you know, footprints and you know, and now this story, and it was really funny. When the story in Idaho broke, I heard mainstream talk show people actually address this issue, and they didn't do it in a manner that was the snicker factor. They actually did it in all seriousness, saying that, you know, this is an interesting story, that, you know, a woman gets in a wreck with her car, hits a deer, and she says a Sasquatch is chasing it. In fact, what's really odd is that while I, you know, reported the story on my Facebook page, I didn't drop everything to talk about it on my show, but because I don't know, it doesn't seem like it's a full show talk, but it is something that should be, you know, noteworthy in the investigations of Bigfoot, and it should be recorded as such. And, you know, another thing, too, is I remember doing a show a while back talking about how there was a Bigfoot that was sighted on a camera in Redwood, California, in the Redwoods. And I made a comment about its anatomy, and everybody was laughing at that. But, I mean, come on. I mean, if that's something you have to use for proof, I mean, you know, nobody laughs about the fact that they use scat, you know, to try and track a Bigfoot. Well, you know, because Bigfoot are creatures, and yes, they poop, and yes, they have anatomy, and yes, they, you know, they must reproduce. I mean, and that's the problem, is that, you know, when you start talking that way about a Bigfoot, you're talking it on a scientific level, you talk about its anatomy, people go, oh, you know, they get a little worried about that. Well, they shouldn't, because if it's a real creature, which I believe it is, because I've seen one, then, you know, it shouldn't matter to you if we're talking about, you know, what the head shape is like or what the chest shape is like. I remember when I talked with Robert Gimlin, and I talked to him about the breasts that were on the Bigfoot that they took there with the Patterson Gimlin film. And he said, yeah, he said they were there. And he said that's one of the things that convinces a lot of people that what they shot was real. And another thing, too, I remember in some scientific discoveries, I think with Lloyd Pye, one of the things that he showed me was a couple of footprints that were left behind by a Bigfoot, these plaster casts. And the thing about the plaster casts was that the feet on this particular creature looked like it had arthritis because the joints were bent. And so these are the type of things that, you know, if you're a hoaxer, you certainly are thinking in great detail. I mean, I wouldn't even think about, you know, feet with arthritic joint, you know, the toes out of joint and, you know, some of the other things that I've seen. So, I mean, how do you explain that? How do you explain, you know, Bigfoot casts where they're not perfect and you see that the toes are out of joint? You know, those are the type of things I think we need to pay attention to if we really truly believe that there's something out there.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, that particular arthritis impression that was passed, that I believe it's called cripple foot. And then that's, you're right, great example. You know, in the Blue Mountains, they've discovered, you know, footprints, and they've cast them in two different areas, you know, 50, 60 miles apart in some horrendous terrain that for a hoaxer would be, it's really hard to believe that someone would go out of their way to do that and expect somebody to be in the right area at the right time. I don't buy it. But having said that, you know, those pieces of evidence, like the Cryptid cast and whatnot, they're great pieces of evidence in my book. Is there any other pieces of evidence that stick out in your mind?
The Skookum cast. The imperfect Skookum cast of the body of a Bigfoot and the shape of the contours of the body when it laid in the mud, I think that is convincing, too. I mean, these are the, you know, it's always the unconventional things that catch my eye. I mean, yeah, you saw Bigfoot. Yeah, you got the cast. Yeah, you think you got hair and you're analyzing the hair. But, you know, when you have these unconventional models where, you know, people see Bigfoot or even, like, for example, the voices. Okay, you know, I've listened to Bigfoot screams. I've listened, you know, and the thing is that, you know, you can mistake the wolf screams. But there is no mistaking that when you're listening to these sounds, and they sound like Mandarin fishermen talking to one another in a language that, you know, no one understands, I mean, that's unconventional. And in my opinion, that's something that either a vivid imagination has created or it's real. And the reality is that the Bigfoot or the Sasquatch, Yetis, they speak to one another. And what we hear are grunts and snorts and whistles that sound like, you know, close to human speech. And I think that, you know, in and of itself is fascinating because, you know, I remember back in the old days, you know, we'd listen to late night talk with Art Bell and we'd hear these screams. Oh, that's a Bigfoot. That's how Bigfoot sound. Well, okay, that's a bass. But then when we got a little bit more into it and we've gotten other sounds that have been presented, and I go, wow, you know, these are, in my opinion, so unconventional that, once again, if they're hoax, they're remarkable hoaxes. And I think that, I don't know if people who are that salt of the earth have that vivid of imagination to, you know, show flaws in a creature. I mean, sometimes stories are too perfect, and other times the stories that aren't perfect that are kind of, you know, outrageous. And like, for example, when I saw the Bigfoot that I saw at Yosemite out there in Washington, the thing that got me about it was, at first I saw it, and the hair on it looked golden brown to me. And I looked even closer, in the short time I saw it, the face looked nothing like I'd imagined the face to be. I was expecting, if it was a Bigfoot, obviously it had to have been, because I haven't seen anything like it in my life. But, I mean, the face didn't seem to be monkey-like. It looked like a pug dog kind of smashed in a little bit, and I was kind of curious. That's how I saw the face, was sort of, hominid, monkey-type, but not like, you know, an ape or a gorilla. It looked very much like a smashed face, like a pug dog. And I was like, wow, what is that? Because, I mean, you know, and you have to try to explain it away with your own logic in your brain, and it's kind of hard to do that. And so you just say to yourself, I saw something eating an apple in an orchard and then ran off when I yelled Bigfoot. So, I mean, that's what I saw. And I'm thinking to myself, it was not anything that I expected it to be. You know, I sit back and I think about it, and I go, well, this Bigfoot sighting, whatever it was, it didn't seem to be like what I've seen other people see. I saw something. It was almost so up close that it was uncomfortable, and I keep thinking about, at times, the face I saw when I saw the Bigfoot, and it just continues to boggle my mind.
Well, Clyde, let's go back to, I'd like to get more into your encounter, your sighting. What exactly took place? What did you see? What were you doing? And what happened afterwards?
Well, it was a Sunday, we usually spend like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at this area called East City. It's James Gilliland's ranch. It's a UFO ranch, but it's in the area of Skamania County, Klickitat County. Those are the areas in Washington State where, you know, Bigfoot is seen most of the time. And what was going on is, it was a Sunday. You know, we were packing, getting ready to go. I just got out of bed. I was drinking coffee in the lodge area, and I was talking with some people, and I looked over, and there was this window near the washing machine area where you can see out the window and out the door, and I saw something move towards the orchard. And at first, and this is no kidding, I saw the hair on it, and I thought, oh, it's kind of a golden brown, kind of like, you know, Robert Plant. I thought, yeah, you know, I was thinking, that's some hair. It looks like Robert Plant. And then I looked beyond the window when it moved, and I saw it wasn't a long-haired man, but it was something that had a darker face with, like I said, it looked like it was smashed in a little. Like someone hit it in the face with a shovel, I guess. I mean, that's how I remember it. And, I mean, there I was standing in shorts and a cup of coffee in my hand, and I just all of a sudden said, Bigfoot. It is Bigfoot. That was what I, you know, it was just my reaction. And then I said, Bigfoot. The thing looked right at me and then started running away from the orchard. And we were out there. We ran, and the thing just took off so fast. And what it did is it, from what we understand, what we saw in the footprint areas, you know, there was some, you know, wet areas, and so there was some footprints, or what I'd say is it was like the balls of the feet of the creature. So what happened is, when I yelled Bigfoot and ran out, it actually started running, and then it leapt, and its ball of its foot went into the side area, and then it darted the other way. So, I mean, they didn't get a cast, but they did take a picture, and somewhere there's a picture of it that James Gilliland has. And in fact, he was on Coast to Coast AM the other night talking about my Bigfoot sighting. So, you know, that was about all. And there was no way, you know, we could keep up with it, but we saw the areas where, you know, some of the reeds were bent or broken, and you could tell that when I said what I said, he ran, and then he hit, for some reason, the ball of his foot, and then probably pushed out and kind of like hopped, and then went over this little area where there was indentation so he wouldn't fall. So he pretty much had a lot of agility, and he could do that sort of thing But it was a young one, I'm sure, because it didn't seem to me that it was that tall. I mean, I guess maybe it could have been about, at any rate, about 6'7" or 6'8". You know, I've heard the 10 feet tall. I've heard the 9 feet. This thing, you know, didn't look like it was that tall.
Well, that's one of the things, of course, people assume that in fact, I still get asked every once in a while, well, isn't Bigfoot one creature? You know, I'm like, no, that the creature in the Patty film is not all Bigfoots that are ever reported, and they come in all different shapes and sizes and colors, and so of course if there's a living population of an animal, that they're going to be, you know, sightings are going to be of different stages of their lives. Old one, you know, you get ones that are described as graying, you get ones that are described as heavy and thinner, and how would you describe, as far as body size, the subject that you saw?
Well, it was broad shouldered and it kind of tapered. It was kind of a broad shoulder, then it tapered down, and then of course the legs. It seemed like the legs were how can I put this? You know, everybody has a waist. You know, everybody has a waist, but this was like, I didn't detect a waist. I just saw, you know, the body taper down and then the legs were there. So it was, you know, it just seemed like that it had more leg than it had waist. And so it was, like I said, that's how I thought it. I said, you know, Bigfoot, because it just didn't look like it belonged there because of how it seemed so odd looking. Big, broad-shouldered, golden brown hair, smashed in darker face, broad shoulder tapering down into, you know, what looked like no waist but just legs, and then it moved quickly. So you know, it was unlike any, you know, body shape, you know, that I've seen before. No curvature, just, you know, straight down legs and after the taper, you know, in the shoulders and in the chest. And then of course, the arms were, you know, the arms were like right, I guess you could say the hands were right near the upper, just above the knee. And, that's how it looked.
What about expression? Did it have any sort of expression of surprise or fear or anger?
I don't know if it was fear. It was more or less curiosity. You know, like, you know, sort of a, you know, who the hell are you? that's what it seemed like. Who the hell are you? I don't know who you are, and I don't want to know. I want to get away from you because you shouted, you know, Bigfoot. I mean, I'm sure he was alarmed by me shouting because I have a very booming voice, and so he looked at me like, who the hell do you think you are? You know, he gave me that look. That's what I got from his book, was that, you know, I don't know who you are and I don't know what you're doing, but I'm not going to stick around to figure it out.
Yeah. So what would, okay, you have this entity, this Sasquatch, I mean, going, you know, instinct and fumble, but yeah, what the heck, who's this guy, curiosity, what was going through your head? Were you just blown away? I mean, did this, were you blown away to the fact that you were like, wow, they do exist? Or did you already kind of have a feeling that Sasquatch was around?
Well, Sasquatch has always been like a bittersweet, you know, type of thought for me, more or less because of the supernatural aspects and the claims of the supernatural. And, you know, you could count on maybe two fingers the Bigfoot shows I've done over the 20, you know, before, you know, I saw Bigfoot. And then after that, you can count it on fingers, toes, and arms how many times now I've talked about Bigfoot on the show. And it's because of the fact that once you have the experience, and once you, you know, when you have your personal experience and there's no question of what you saw, you know, you tend to want to find out more. You tend to want to hear more stories. You tend to want to hear other witness testimony. And because I think you're trying to find, you know, someone who can relate to the shock. Mine was just shock. And the thing is that's, you know, my first thought was not grabbed from my phone camera or any of that. It was just standing there observing, going, wow, what do I do now? I just stand and I walk towards it. And, but it walked away. It ran away. And I'm like going, wow, if I just would have thought to grab my camera, if I just would have, you know, on my phone or, you know, whatever. And that's why I always hear from people, you think with cell phones, you know, we'd be able to get better proof. No, that's not what happens. I mean, you have your cell phone in your hand. You have to unlock it. I mean, for some people who have them, I have a flip phone, but, you know, some people have their smartphones. They have to unlock the phone. Then they have to grab the camera, put it in camera mode, and try to snap a picture of something that you know, this is running away from you. And it's hard to do. People don't understand. I mean, unless you have your phone in your hand, it's unlocked and ready to go, and you can snap the photo. And that's why if someone can get something on camera or film or on their cell phone, you know, gosh, hats off to them, because, you know, things happen so quickly and you know, you don't think to yourself, oh, this would make a great picture. You know, I'd blow the lid off the Bigfoot case if I could get this perfect picture. You're going, what in the heck am I seeing here? And then you decide after it's disappeared, oh, I should have grabbed my camera. I should have took a picture of it or something. That's how I felt. I was really, in fact, I tell people, I said, you know, I saw Bigfoot. And the minute I saw Bigfoot and was shocked, and after it all, after I kind of, you know, calmed down and it was over, I thought to myself, damn it, I saw Bigfoot. And the reason why I thought that is because if I tell anybody, and I did, I went on the air and I said, hey, you know, one of the things that happened to me is I saw Bigfoot. And you wouldn't believe the ridicule and the, this is just for ratings or blah, blah, blah. And I knew it because if I didn't have any proof, I knew that people out there would think to themselves, I'm just lying to them and I'm doing it to get a rise out of people. And that's the thing is that if you don't have a camera shot or you don't have anything to prove your story, it goes right up there with the big fish you almost caught. And that's basically how I compare it. It's like, oh, this is a big fish I almost caught. It was that big, you know. And, you know, people go, sure, tell me another fish story. So that's what it feels like when you see Bigfoot. You don't have any proof. It's just a fish story, and that's sad but true.
Yeah, you know, with just about every sighting out there, it's the same, you know, same sort of setup, same sort of story. It's a fleeting glint. It lasts seconds. You're not prepared. Even when you think you're prepared, you're not prepared. And for the vast majority of sightings, people aren't looking for Bigfoot. They're not expecting it. And bam, it happens. And phone, camera is on what they're looking at. And, I mean, that's just
right.
The way it goes. And I believe that's, you know, why, you know, the Sasquatch still remains so elusive. It's, you know, it is just a fleeting glimpse. They don't hang around long. But, you know, that area that you had your sighting in is a phenomenal area. It's beautiful, and it's got a rich, rich history of Sasquatch sightings. Have you talked to anybody either on your show or in person that has had a sighting in the general vicinity of that area?
Oh, yeah, a lot of people. Stevenson, many people have seen Bigfoot in Stevenson, Washington. In fact, people joke that it's a wonder they just don't walk up to the kiosk and order an espresso down there. and, of course, in Skamania County, it's funny because they've actually made it illegal to hunt Bigfoot. And it's in their laws not to harm the Bigfoot, you know, herd or the group because they're up there and they believe they're up there. And that's why they made this deal that you're not supposed to hunt them. So, you know, just observe, watch. Another thing, too, that was interesting and it kind of makes sense is that the time I was up there at East SETI, Mount Adams, apparently, there was a forest fire on the other side of Mount Adams that was burning. And I think that that's probably why the Bigfoot just happened to be there, because I think that they probably had to travel from the other side of Mount Adams to get away from the fires. And that usually is the case, that there's some sort of fire or some sort of an obstacle in the forest that causes the Bigfoot groups to move to other areas where they wouldn't normally be seen. And I think that's what the case was with me, is that just by some chance, there was a fire on the other side of the mountain, and I'm sure many of the Bigfoot that lived there had to move to other areas. And, you know, that one was probably just passing through, trying to find food, foraging for food, and then when I saw it, it just took off. So, you know, it would make a lot of sense that with, you know, the fires there and the other problems that, you know, a group of Bigfoot would move or at least find themselves in an area where they're safe.
That's a really, really great point. You know, I had a friend like that put together a sightings map, and he overlaid the fires the last couple of years in some of these areas. And what we noticed was that the sightings were greater in other areas after the fires, you know, because Sasquatch and other animals were displaced because of these fires. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're going to have higher occurrence sightings in other areas, perhaps areas that really never had Sasquatch sightings before. That's, you know, that's just a fantastic point. The you know, your sighting itself, I find fascinating, especially with your description. You know, like the, is that what you were, when you saw things? Was, I mean, did it kind of blow your mind, or was just, you know, maybe kind of what you would have thought a Sasquatch would have looked like? And have you ever talked to anybody on your show or anywhere else that's kind of had a similar sighting of a Sasquatch, but similar to your description?
No, I've never talked to anybody that has the same sighting. And as I said earlier, it's nothing like I expected. I mean, you know, I've seen, you know, all my life from the time I was a child, you know, I'd seen these, you know, reenactments of Bigfoot sightings, and I'd seen, you know, pictures on the side of the road of something that looks like a monkey or perhaps the back of a bear or something like that, that, you know, you're looking at, you're going, oh, that could be a bear, that could be anything. But what I saw, you know, was most definitely, and I would say a hominid of some sort on its legs. And it was something that, you know, when I first saw it, I thought it looked like a man, kind of had a hair like Robert Plant, you know, back in the old Led Zeppelin days. And then, you know, its whole body was covered in this golden brown type hair that was, you know, curly in some spots like sheep's wool. You know, and it was really, you know, interesting. And I'm thinking, well, what is that? And then when I looked and said Bigfoot, its head turned, it looked right at me, and I'm going, whoa. That face was like, whoa. And I'm thinking, that is just too weird. You know, I just don't. I've never seen anything like this. Maybe, you know, if you look at a gibbon, you know what I'm saying? I mean, if you look at one of the gibbons and how their faces look, how they have the big eyes and they have sort of the drawn back face. That's why I say, you know, a pug looking type face. You know, it didn't have. In fact, I'm looking up a gibbon right now to see what gibbons look like, and yeah, something like what a gibbon would look like. You know, if you look up gibbon, but, you know, gibbons have sort of that cute monkey face, but this is more of a, it's kind of like that. I'm looking at a gibbon right now online, and, yeah, it looks kind of like a gibbon. That's the only way I can describe it. The face is more like a gibbon and less like a monkey.
One of the great aspects to your encounter was the fact that there were multiple witnesses. That doesn't happen. It happens less than it actually, you know, and you would expect. I've been around a few groups that, you know, claim to have seen things, but your encounter is pretty fascinating for the fact that, you know, more than one witness.
Yeah, I mean, they were there, more than one witness. They ran faster than me because I couldn't run that fast. I was heavier then and wasn't able to run that fast. But they were running. One guy named Kars, he ran and tried to chase it, and he said, I was right behind it, and then it just gained speed, and I couldn't get close to it. So he was right there, too, and, you know, there were a few other people that came out that got a glimpse of it out of the corner of their eye, but everybody was just standing there wondering what the heck just happened, what did they see, and, you know, everybody, you know, said that, you know, I got the better glimpse of it because I was looking right at the door. Other people said they saw it out of the corner of their eye, wondered what it was because it moved so quickly. So, yeah, we had a few witnesses, and they will testify that, yeah, they saw the Bigfoot too. But, yeah, I think I got the better look of it, though. I think I got, you know, when I get it looking at me right in the face. In fact, right now I'm looking at a picture of a lard gibbon that kind of reminds me of what it looked like, actually. It was really kind of an interesting look.
And I'm looking at one of...
Yeah.
I'm looking at one of those too, and I kind of see it gives you the context of what you're saying. It's a flatter face, the kind of shovel to the face look. So.
Yeah, I mean, and then that's how I saw it because, I mean, the way it looked at me. And, I mean, up close, I probably would have seen it a lot better. But I've got this I've got this enlarged picture right now I'm looking at, and it's just exactly the face that I saw. It was exactly like that. It was amazing looking, you know, kind of a flattened monkey face or something to that extent.
Now, we live in the Mecca. I mean, Pacific Northwest is considered the Mecca, a great area for Sasquatch activity and a great area to possibly see a Sasquatch. You know, as for advice for people, if someone wants to go out and maybe have an encounter, you know, and I know it's a rarity, but living, you know, especially here in the Pacific Northwest, what advice would you give someone? I mean, there's TV shows, there's radio shows, and they kind of portray how you're, you know, they how to go out and find a Bigfoot. But how would you tell someone to go out and do some research or just have an experience, if possible?
That I know of, because my wife, she lived in Kelso, and she said there were a lot of Bigfoot there when she lived there. In fact, they would hang around the pipeline that goes through there, and she never knew why they did that, but they did. They would hang out where the pipeline was, and they would eat some of the bark. I think it's cherry wood bark off the trees, and she said that, you know, while she never really saw a creature, she said though that she knew they were there because they would stack rocks, and that, you know, they would stack rocks, and so you'd see these huge rocks being stacked one on top of the other. And no one, you know, would be stacking that big of rocks just for fun, she said. They were just too big, and you could see them, you know, on the sides of the pathways. She used to ride horses in the area. But, you know, now it just seems to me that area probably doesn't have as many Sasquatch there because of the volcano eruption and that it wiped out a lot. I mean, the ape caves, of course, named after the caves where the Bigfoot were dwelling. You know, people say that every once in a while they see something out there on the southern slope near Mount St. Helens. And, of course, Grant's Pass is another place where I've heard that you see a lot of Bigfoot. But Skamania County and Klickitat County of Washington State, highly, you know, forested area and dense forest, and you'd be more than likely to, you know, be on the either sense a Bigfoot, see a Bigfoot, or even, you know, smell one if one gets close enough to you. But, you know, and I would say those are the areas. I think the Sequoias are another place to catch a Bigfoot there. Sometimes the Sierra Nevada Mountains, Tahoe area, there are places there, I hear, that you can see one. It's the luck of the draw. I don't know if anyone seeking a Bigfoot usually finds them, but it's, once again, it's an accidental discovery. You know, something's chasing a deer and you wreck your car, or you just happen to be getting up, packing your bags to go back home after a nice, you know, camp out at a very beautiful ranch, and you look out and there it is standing there eating apples. I mean, these types of things,
right,
you know, are once in a lifetime. And while, you know, I used to dwindle in faith with Bigfoot, now I'm convinced that something is out there. And, you know, the experience at the time was mind-boggling, disappointing that I didn't pick up a camera and take a picture. But it's also, you know, reaffirming that, you know, we don't always know everything. And even though, you know, nobody has really given definitive proof, at least that's what they say, you know, the proof is in the experience, and the confirmation is in the sighting. And, you know, and I know what I saw or what I didn't see. you know, that's the thing, is your brain keeps telling you, did I really see it? Didn't I see it? And people say, aren't you sure? Well, yeah, I'm sure I saw something, but my brain keeps wanting to tell me that it was really nothing, that I was just hallucinating something. But no, it wasn't a hallucination. It was something that was very real, and I can describe it because it was not more than, you know, maybe a yard away from me, not even that.
And that's one of the things that's really compelling is the process that you described for processing the sighting is so familiar with talking to other people that have had encounters, is that there's a tendency first to, you know, to try to make whatever they're seeing fit into, like in your case, Robert Plant. In fact, I'm surprised you didn't yell out Robert Plant first instead of Bigfoot. But I wonder if Bigfoot would have reacted the same way. But then kind of questioning, did I really see what I see, you know, what I saw, it's that same chain that witnesses have. One of the differences for you is that you host a radio show about unexplained phenomenon,
right.
and so.
As I said, it's one of those topics that I never covered really. I mean, I did one story a while back called Sasquatch Summer, and it was published only because of a Sasquatch sighting that happened in Grants Pass. That's the only reason why I wrote it. And then there was another one I wrote that was, just to write about it. And then, you know, I didn't really touch the Bigfoot subject. Because I met Lloyd Pye. I think that's one of the reasons why I wrote another subject. Lloyd Pye impressed me with his book, Everything You Know Is Wrong. And I kept in touch with Lloyd a lot, but he started, fancying himself into investigating the Star Child. And he continued to look into that before he died. But it was after, my sighting, really, that, I started realizing that, this is a topic that I believe needs to be rediscovered and reinvestigated. And that while, I knew there were a lot of Bigfoot researchers out there, it was once more like a reunion of sorts, or getting back to my roots as to why I came to the Northwest. Because I remember saying, I'm moving to the Northwest, and everybody in Utah, where I was from, say, why are you doing that? I said, well, that's where all the UFOs were sighted in the beginning, and that's where Bigfoot is, and D.B. Cooper is there, so it's an area of mystery. And when I did this, I found so many interesting coincidences about my life. Like I moved into an apartment that was basically the backyard, and I didn't know this until I did some research. The backyards were one of the first UFO sightings you were seeing near the Ross Island Bridge in Oregon. And then found out that my colleague and friend Wolfgang Gossett was a suspect of the D.B. Cooper case. And then I see a Bigfoot when I'm out at DeSantis. So, I mean, all these coincidences happening. And that's why I realized I was meant to come to the Northwest. And it's because, I'm finding out, more and more interesting things about the stuff I was curious about when I was younger. And I'm discovering more things and more coincidences. I've had plenty of coincidences in my life where I've met, really famous people, and I've run into them. And it's not because of my radio career. It's just because that's who I am. I guess I attract this stuff. But I never in a million years would have thought that I would see a Bigfoot. And that's what I think is so special. Is more special than seeing a UFO or bright lights in the sky or having a ghost encounter. To see a Bigfoot, though, I think is far more major and a little bit more rare than, seeing a ghost walk by or seeing weird lights in the sky. I think that the whole idea of a Bigfoot sighting is rare and fun and interesting.
Well, that too, one of the things that, you shared your encounter very publicly and to see that you got a negative response from, some people, it just, it kind of solidifies why witnesses that don't have your platform or, don't come forward because they're concerned that they're not going to be believed, that people are going to think they're crazy. And I've found over and over again with witnesses that I've talked to, and I might have been the first person they spoke with ever about their encounter. It might have happened. I've had a couple people that it was 30 years ago and they've never shared it, or they initially shared it with friends and family, and the response that they got caused them to not, to put it in a box and put it away, and they're just kind of waiting for the opportunity to have somebody to talk to about it that isn't going to think that they're crazy, and and that, or that they're lying. So,
well, yeah, I mean, why would anybody, you know, when I thought about releasing it and being very public about it, I didn't even think that there would be this kind of ridicule. I didn't. I mean, I thought, yeah, you know, you tell a story and everybody's gonna, and a few people are gonna not believe you. But I mean, it was, some of it was vicious. I mean, I'm thinking, why would something like this anger you enough to troll you on social media and to send you emails that were, you know, I mean, it's like, that's not, I don't get why that's such a so hard for people to handle. And the idea that they're thinking that, and this is what these skeptics think, they think that, oh, you saw Bigfoot, boy, that's going to turn into a book and a movie. And no, it doesn't happen like that. In fact, when people have encounters or they have things happen, none of that ever happens. There's no money to be made, and there's no contracts or book deals or anything like that. It's just exciting, and it's interesting. And you know, if you talk about it, and you're around people who want to hear the story, it's an interesting story. And then it's the obsession of trying to figure out, you know, what it truly was. And then after you've, you know, analyzed all the logical explanations, then you go beyond that and you say, hey, you know, this is something that happens to a lot of people, and they don't talk about it, but you have, and now you have to face, you know, you have to face the challenge of, you know, informing yourself and being involved and opening your eyes and talking with people, giving them an example of what you've seen.
Well, I appreciate that you have been willing to talk about your encounter, because I think it helps other people that are reluctant to come forward. I always talk, because there's two of us on this call, this interview, that have walked through the door of confirmation. You know, and I'm still standing on the outside where I have not had what I refer to as the confirmation encounter.
Right.
And I think the mindset then goes from are they to what are they? And the pursuit then is, you know, what are these things that are so elusive that man pursuit is, the people that are in pursuit of them have to date not been able to confirm their existence. So it's a fast, that's one of the things about the subject that just drives me to keep researching it and going out and looking for evidence and talking to witnesses. And your encounter is really compelling to me, because multiple witnesses, a facial daylight sighting, you know, from close proximity, and some corroborating evidence, and just cool. So I appreciate you sharing it with us.
Well, and not only that, but it's the circumstances before, you know, the situation. There were other people who said, like, for example, you know, my friend Roger and his, at the time, girlfriend had a deer jump over them. And they didn't understand what a deer was doing in the compound, and you know, that would be the precursor. So a deer was in the camp. It jumped over. It jumped high above, you know, this woman that was walking back to her yurt. Another thing that was, I remember someone telling me that Olaf Phillips was there, and Larry Overman, who's one of the ghost miners, was up there with us, and they said that they saw, you know, what appeared to be, you know, figures on the side of the mountain, Mount Adams, and you know, they didn't know what they were. They just said they saw these figures up there, and so it all adds up, you know, in my opinion, because after, you know, after I said that I saw this, then comes the stories of, well, you know, and I remember when the deer jumped over. Her name was Dina. She screamed, and you know, everybody wondered, well, what the hell is going on? And he says, a deer just jumped over me. And I'm thinking, okay, so why would a deer be in a compound, and why would it be so frightened? I just don't know that deer can jump. You know, she was about, what, 5'2"? So this deer jumped like 5 feet above her and over her. So it was frightened and everything. And then, of course, I hear the story from Olaf and from others who were up there. Well, yeah, we saw some figures walking around, and we didn't know what they were. They just looked like really tall men, you know, out there. And so, yeah, it was, you know, the precursors, everybody said that they saw something that was out of place, but they, you know, they didn't want to go as far as to say maybe a Bigfoot was chasing a deer or that Bigfoot was walking, you know, in the area. But then after I had my sighting, I was going, I wonder if that was what that was. I wonder if the Bigfoot was chasing a deer. I wonder if, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, and you, so you look at all the sideline stories as well and the compelling stories that they've told, and you're realizing, well, yes, something was amiss or something was out of the ordinary. And, you know, you can't pinpoint what it is right off the bat. And so you have to ask around. You have to, you know, see if anyone else had seen something or if anybody else had felt something, a presence or what have you. And that's what you do. You know, you want to find out more and you want to hear from other people. And that's why, you know, I'm more than happy to, you know, talk about this because, you know, maybe someone, you know, saw something similar around the same time, you know, or maybe not. I mean, I think that's why it's important. I know that when I talked to Peter Davenport with the National UFO Reporting Center, he always tells me, he says, UFOs don't matter unless you file a report with him or file a report with MUFON or somebody else. And it's true. I mean, how are we going to find out if someone has seen something or if they can identify something if we don't talk about it? And how are we going to find out, you know, the movements of a Bigfoot or the movements of a Yeti or a Sasquatch? How are we going to find out all that if we don't talk about it and people don't come forward and talk about it? I mean, you know, sure, you get some ridicule at first, but it just dies down after a while. And then I'm sure people, you know, after they calm down, their initial shock calms down, I'm sure that the same people are going to, you know, come back and ask you, you know, so what exactly happened to you? You know, and I want to know because I had an experience too. Not going, then why were you being so critical of me with my experience? I mean, some of the worst offenders are people who've had experiences and they just, I don't know. It people act strange. They do strange things when they're confronted with, you know, strange anomalies.
Mm-hmm. Clyde, it's been fantastic talking with you, and I'm really curious. You know, you got this really popular, amazing radio show in Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis. Hugely successful. What got you in the radio? What was the draw? What got you into this field?
I wanted to be a television weatherman, and I actually realized that weathermen don't get any respect, and so I decided to go into radio. Now I realize that radio doesn't get any respect. You know, that was one of the reasons. I did broadcasting in high school, and I wanted to get into television broadcasting, movie making, and maybe even be an actor. And I did do some acting. I've been in a few movies, and then I realized I'm a frustrated rock star, so I decided to get into radio. And Ground Zero was kind of accidental because I was offered a talk show back in 1995, and I wanted to be a talk show that would be so unique and so bizarre and so out there that you can't help but listen to it. And it's taken me, you know, 20 years, 22 years to get it to this point. And right now, I mean, it's basically my life now. I didn't expect a radio show to be my life. In fact, I would have been content, you know, ramping up Black Sabbath albums on an adult rock and roll station. But I did this, I'm doing this, and I'm pretty happy and it's basically been an adventure, a really good adventure, actually.
Well, Clyde, we're just about out of time, so we want to thank you for joining us today and talking about your encounter up there at the SETI Ranch. And for Monster X listeners that would like to listen to Catch a Shot Clyde's show, it's Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis. You look it up online. How often is your show playing, Clyde?
Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Pacific time till midnight Pacific time, Monday through Friday. There's a best of on Saturday on KXL.com. If you want to find radio stations in your area that play the show or at least radio stations that stream the show, you can go to TalkStreamLive.com, click on the Clyde Lewis icon, and they'll be able to find those radio stations that play the show. You can also go to SoundCloud.com/GroundZeroMedia to listen to past shows. And, of course, if you want to read any material that I have, buy any of my books, you can do that by going to the Ground Zero Bookstore online. It's groundzerobookstore.com. That's groundzerobookstore.com. And there you'll find, you know, information that I've written, ideas that I have out there, Ground Zero goodies, T-shirts, and all that cool stuff, and plenty of places to find me. Just, you know, Ground Zero with Clive Lewis on Google, and you'll find all the areas where you can hear me or otherwise, you know, get to my Facebook page or whatever. That's where we do all of our updates there. So there's a lot of things, a lot of places you can go to find me.
What, you got any upcoming events? I know that you go out and make public appearances in the Portland area. You got anything coming up soon?
I'll be at the Oregon Ghost Conference in Seaside, Oregon this weekend, March 31st through April 2nd. We'll be doing the Cherry City Comic Con April 8th and 9th. And I'll be in Joshua Tree for Contact in the Desert on May 19th. So that's pretty much. Oh, and the International Bigfoot Conference in Kennewick, Washington. I'll be there September 1st through the 3rd. And we also are going to be doing Ground Zero University, the Skype Live Studio, April 15th, right here in downtown Portland. We're going to be having Alana Freeland, Tracy Twyman, H. Michael Sweeney, and Anthony Patch. They'll all be speaking at the Ground Zero University. It's a gathering of people to learn more about these topics and do so in sort of a lecture, TED Talks type of atmosphere. So it'll be a lot of fun for them there.
I think I'm going to put that one on my calendar, so that sounds cool. Okay, well, for Shane Corson, this is Gunnar Monson. We want to again thank Clyde Lewis from Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis for joining us today. And until next time, keep it squatchy. Thanks for everybody for listening.
Thank you, Shane. Thank you, Gunnar.
Thanks, Clyde.
You bet. It was great. Thank you.
Bet.
Have a good